Okay, can you quickly just tell us how you've seen regression been used in litigation?
Yes, so regression is used in a variety of contexts in litigation. In labor markets, you'll see regression used in, especially in employment discrimination cases. Again, it's holding constant a variety of factors. You might say holding constant years on the job, years of education, your recent, reviews by your employer. Is gender statistically significant with respect to hiring, firing, promotion, earnings, et cetera? So you could use it to assess for discrimination. There events in financial markets, 10b-5 cases, event studies are used a lot. Just a specific form of regression analysis to help help estimate damages where a firm has made a disclosure that perhaps they shouldn't have or didn't make a disclosure where they should have. In antitrust, you'll see regression used to estimate elasticities of demand. You guys remember your price elasticities of demand? No? All right. Is anybody out there? All right. So anyway, most of my work these days, though, is in intellectual property, and we do use regression a lot. Like Tamara said, we've worked together for many years, and we've conducted regression analyses using cross-sectional data and time series, making predictive models, structural break analyses, but more recently, we're seeing a lot of chatter about hedonic regression in the patent space.
Right, and in a little bit, Bailey's going to kind of talk about the case law involving the hedonic regression. But just briefly, can you kind of give us an overview of hedonic regression?
Oh, sure. So essentially with hedonic regression, that's some fun stuff about hypothesis testing. Oh, I forgot to talk about that. That happens. All right, so in hedonic pricing, we are, let me just jump right here. There we go. So in hedonic regression, it's essentially multiple variable regression where your independent variables are the features of a product, including your dependent variable is your price. So if you have a feature that is accused and then you have a variety of other features, you could hold constant those unaccused features and see whether or not there's a relationship between the accused feature and price. That's at the heart of what hedonic regression is. What you're trying to estimate is what's called the shadow price or the implied price. And so in this case, if X1 is the dummy, a dummy variable just means it's 0 or 1. So either it has the accused feature or it doesn't. In this model, your beta 1 would tell you the shadow price for that patented feature. But that's true under some assumptions that we'll talk about in a little while.
Okay, great. All right, Bailey, can you give us an overview of the recent case law as it relates to hedonic regression and patent damages? I mean, it's my understanding that we haven't seen any guidance yet from the Federal Circuit regarding hedonic regression.
Yes, that's correct. Erin, if you could go to slide 10, please.
Yes. That's right. Sorry.
There we go. One more back. There we go. One more back.
Oh, this one. Sorry.
There we go. Okay. So Erin just introduced hedonic regression, and this is particularly interesting in the patent context because we're asked frequently to put a value on a single feature or a couple features in a product that has hundreds or thousands of features. So hedonic regression has led to both exclusions and recently a very large jury award, so that's why we're here to talk about it. And so I want to talk briefly about two Intel cases. And as the lawyer on the panel, just a general disclaimer that Kirkland was not involved in either of these cases, so none of this includes any confidential information. It's all just what we can glean from the public record.
And I will note, too, that when we're going through this, we haven't seen any of the damages expert reports or anything like that. It's just what you said, stuff that we've pulled that's publicly available.
All right, so in March of 2014, we're going to talk about the Stragent v. Intel case. This was an Eastern District of Texas case, and it was Judge Dyke sitting by designation. And in that case, Judge Dyke excluded the testimony of the expert, Christopher Velturo, under Federal Rule of Evidence 702. So the expert here used a hedonic regression analysis. As Erin mentioned, he was highly qualified. He has a PhD from MIT. but the defendants challenged his analysis, saying that it was unreliable and it wasn't supported by an accepted methodology. And the defendants won. This was kept out. In the Stragent case, the accused products were Intel chips, of course, and the patent covered an error detection feature. And so this expert wanted to use, or he did use, the hedonic regression to estimate the value of this error detection feature as it contributes to the overall price of the chips, of the accused chips. So the hedonic regression was not excluded simply because it is a hedonic regression, but it was excluded because it didn't reliably estimate the value of the feature. And there were two big problems here. So the expert had data for 19 variables. Aaron talked about how there can be tons of variables. So in this case, there were 19 identified variables, and they all related to RAS, or RAS, so reliability, availability, and service. And there were two problems here. So the first problem is that these 19 features were present as a group. They were either all included in a chip or none of them were included in a chip. And so all of the accused products had all of the 19 features.
All of them. And so you know, when Bailey says that, you can imagine this X1, which is the dummy variable for the patented feature. It's essentially on or off, you know, all of the time, right? So all of these 19, he was essentially squishing 19 variables into one variable.